The good thing is that given the technology that we've developed at OncoCardia, we can ubiquitously apply this technology to all the different outputs we get from these cells. And as a result, the advancement in the cardiotoxicity space could also be beneficial in assessing other forms of toxicity.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use AI to redesign drugs to be faster, safer, and more effective. So drug design is really a key area that AI is revolutionizing. What if we could actually come up with an effective, safe new drug in days or weeks or months rather than almost a decade? Today, I'm with Alice Yu and Mina Abdel-Sayed, who are the co-founders of OncoCardia, a company that uses artificial intelligence to redesign drugs. I'm so happy to have you both on, and you know, we're all in the same place. So if we could start with a little bit about your background, you know, so let's start with you, Alice. What got you into this? How did you get into this? And what led you to co-found OncoCardia?
Absolutely. Well, first off, thanks for having us on the podcast. We're really excited to be here. I'm Alice. I'm the CEO and co-founder of OncoCardia. My background's in bioinformatics. I studied it for undergrad at UC San Diego, and I did my PhD at Stanford in biomedical informatics. During my PhD, I developed novel computational approaches to predict cell-cell interaction in the tumor microenvironments. And that's really led me to really deeply enjoy computational development, AI, understand AI, and also cancer biology. And so after grad school, I worked at an early stage startup doing AI cell therapy discovery work. And that was my intro into startup land, and I loved it. And I decided I really wanted to start my own venture. And so I've always been passionate about designing better drugs for cancer. My mom passed away almost a decade ago from breast cancer. And ever since then, I've always been really interested in developing better drugs. And so I was super fortunate to meet Mina, who's also extremely passionate about developing better drugs, and our backgrounds really synergize so well. I'm bringing the computational and the business aspect, and Mina's also bring business and also the cardiotox and also the experimental background.
Nice. Well, that leads into Mina. Could you tell us a bit about your background?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you again for having us here on the show. I'm Mina Abdel-Sayed, the co-founder of OncoCardia. I was raised in Vancouver, Canada, where I received my education. That's where I completed my PhD in cardiac electrophysiology in Dr. Peter Rubin's lab. There we studied ion channel physiology and a bunch of different cardiac arrhythmia syndromes. And my experience with drug discovery started there, where I discovered a class of compounds that are potential antiarrhythmics that treat a very rare orphan disease known as Brugada syndrome and early repolarization syndrome. Got really passionate about the drug discovery business there. And I knew that at some point I would, you know, safely transition from academia to industry. But I didn't know when, really. So, you know, I thought that after the PhD, I would do more research, get more wet lab experience just before making that transition safely into the industry world, or potentially having, you know, one foot in academia, one foot in the business world or in the industry world of drug discovery. So I decided to venture to Stanford University, where I did my postdoc at Dr. Mark Mercola's lab. And there I spent a good 3 years or so mastering the technique of stem cell biology. So basically taking, we basically take blood cells from patients and convert them into a stem cell that has the ability to differentiate into many different types of cells in the body. Now we use this technology to differentiate the stem cells into cardiac or heart cells. and, you know, developing a monolayer in a dish, you could see live beating heart cells beat right in front of your eyes. And those are more or less the patient heart cells. So you could try a plethora of different compounds and drugs and see which ones work and which ones don't for that specific patient, and hence personalized medicine. So, you know, that was just fascinating for me. And at the same time, it gave me some anchorage in the scientific discipline, really built some robust training in the sciences, but also tried to, you know, harbor my interests and or harness my interests in industry by enrolling in the Stanford Ignite Visibility Program at the Graduate School of Business, where they taught us basically in a month and a half, basically how to take a concept or an idea into the market, what to do, how to become a successful entrepreneur. Now, you know, interacting with top tier scholars in the business world, and also, you know, interacting with successful entrepreneurs, I was like, okay, this is where I would love to be. And you know, in the next decade of my life, I would love to have a startup. And thankfully, I ran into Alice Yu just last March. And ever since, we've been ideating, putting a pitch deck together, pitching. And, you know, it's just been very stimulating in the sense that you're always being exposed to new things every day. It's not only about the sciences that we're really immersing ourselves in, but it's an interdisciplinary field where you need to, you know, consult with attorneys, with scientists, with key opinion leaders, with a business consultant, with so many people. You need to build that network constantly. And it just, you know, thus far it's been 6 months, but it has been amazing.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you met each other. How did you come together to actually form OncoCardio? What was kind of the thing that you the spring of the idea where you went, oh, wait a minute, this would really mesh well for this concept?
Yeah, so I think I came in with the idea of wanting to definitely work on AI drug discovery or AI drug design, and I was really interested in the cancer space. I met Mina, who was extremely passionate about the cancer space, really wanted to build a company here as well, and he was looking for an AI co-founder. And so we started talking, and fortunately, Mina, this whole inspiration of OncoCardio actually came from work from Mark Mercola's lab. We're not directly related to the project, but they were actually able to re-engineer this anti-cancer drug called ponatinib, and it's highly cardiotoxic, although efficacious in a particular subset of cancer patients. Mm-hmm. And so a bunch of medicinal chemists were able to go in, tweak it, and maintain efficacy while reducing cardiotox by over like 90%, which is incredible, except it just took a long time. And so we were talking and we thought, why don't we try to use AI to essentially reduce this process, make it faster, and try to do it across the multiple drugs that have either failed in clinical trials or on the market. And that was sort of the inspiration and the start of OncoCardio.
Really cool. So let's start with you, Alice. The blend of AI and biotech seems to be obviously a very potent combination in modern medicine. So how does OncoCardio leverage this blend, and what advantages does it offer over traditional methods?
Yeah, so as we've seen with ChatGPT, AI is just huge right now. We see the potential of it. And so we're really excited to use generative AI to apply it to this problem. And so we're combining that along with some prior work that I've done during my grad school using more causal inference models, as well as combining it with our own data sets. So Mina's developed this amazing drug screening platform, so we have proprietary data from there. And the combination of new AI approaches plus new data, plus also incorporating existing data, I think makes our AI model really powerful.
Yeah. And then how does the AI-driven molecule generation process work? And what would you say are the key challenges that you face when you're redesigning these drugs?
Yeah, so I would say on a very high level, our AI platform works by having this drug of interest. Let's say it's one that had the high toxicity. We feed it through our model. We're able to predict analogs that are potentially less toxic, as well as synthesis routes for them. And then another part of the AI model is predicting off-target effects. So one of our key hypotheses is that a lot of the toxicity occurs because small molecules are small and they bind onto different proteins in the body. So if we're able to essentially make a map of all the different proteins that they're binding to on a tissue-specific level, we can better understand, one, like, can we redesign the drug to mitigate that? And two, what are potential mechanisms of action for toxicity. And so I would say the key challenges would be if we encounter any toxicity reasons that are outside of the hypothesis, and we understand that biology is really complicated. So there's definitely different reasons for toxicity. And we hope that in the future, we can continue to build our AI models to capture all these different toxicity avenues.
Nice. So we'll turn to Mina for a second. So with you, the combination of AI with advanced stem cell technology is obviously very innovative. Can you elaborate on how the stem cell-backed platform in OncoCardio functions?
Absolutely. So again, this was inspired by the work that I did formerly in the Mark Mercola lab during my postdoc. However, the former training and the classic method of analyzing, you know, the cardiac outputs that you would record from a 384 well plate is that you would basically be analyzing the signal from each individual well. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in each individual well, we would be, you know, seeding around 20 to 50K cells. So the signal would be an aggregate of all these cells and not indicative or representative of each individual cell. Now, just imagine summing up the signal from each individual cell within the well and all the wells within the 384 well plate. You would get a massive sample size, which we weren't really leveraging, you know, or making use of. So with the help of Dr. Mark Mercola, and I owe a lot of the success that I had in during my training and at OncoCardio to Dr. Mark Mercola for his support and his help along the way. He's the one who encouraged me to start, you know, looking into the single cell analysis. And in doing so, you know, we're currently transferring this technology to OncoCardio, analyzing every single cell output. And as a result, the aggregate now that we have, or the sum of the outputs, is, you know, a magnitude 10x to 100x higher than it was before. And as a result, you have a very high power of sampling the cells, and also a very high representation of reality. You're closer to reality in that regard, which is, you know, very, very beneficial when it comes to assessing cardiotoxicity and efficacy of the drug.
Yeah. So from your research at Stanford and, you know, your groundbreaking work in converting stem cells into live heart cells, which is pretty amazing, how has that influenced the direction and the strategies that you're using now at OncoCardio?
Yeah, so I mean, we're not only looking at cardiotoxicity at OncoCardio. I mean, that is the primary concern, because, you know, out of all the toxicities that these anti-cancer drugs cause, cardiotoxicity is the most lethal. And that's why, you know, we're kind of focusing on cardiotoxicity as our primary form of toxicity that we just want to target. But there mm-hmm. are other forms, and there are other things that we could do with stem cells, convert them into liver cells, brain cells, you know, all these different types of cells. And we're actually working again with a company that's close to Dr. Mark Mercola. He sits on the board of directors of this company who has the capabilities of converting stem cells into all these different different cells that we could then use to assess different forms of toxicity, not only cardiotoxicity. The good thing is that given the technology that we've developed at OncoCardio, we can ubiquitously apply this technology to all the different outputs we get from these cells. And as a result, you know, the advancement in the cardiotoxicity space could also be beneficial in assessing other forms of toxicity.
Nice. And to you again, Mina, could you provide some insights into the challenges and successes of using induced pluripotent stem cell cardiomyocyte physiology in your high throughput screenings?
Absolutely. So stem cells, or what we call induced pluripotent stem cell cardiomyocytes, it is a relatively new technology in the field. I mean, it hasn't been there for decades, just, you know, a decade or so of development of this technology to its current form. And to be fully honest, we're not doing too bad. The reason why I say so is initially, once we differentiated stem cells to cardiomyocytes or heart cells, we noticed that they mimicked a fetal form of heart cells. They weren't really mature. the voltage recordings, the calcium and the contractility, or the beating motion like recordings that we would analyze from these cells, mimic something like a fetal heart cell, not a mature ventricular heart cell that you would find in a real patient's heart. So again, thanks to Dr. Mark Mercola, and I call this the magic recipe that he created a few years ago in his lab, there's a new technology that he developed known as the metabolic maturation media. And what this maturation media does is basically, after you differentiate these stem cells into cardiomyocytes, you allow the cells to sit in the maturation media for a good 4 to 5 weeks or so. And what we notice is that they start maturing to become very similar to ventricular live beating heart cells. And when we assess the voltage, the calcium, and the contractility recordings from these cells, you know, we see a spike upstroke of the action potential, very much like the ventricular cells. We see all these different properties that almost mimic, or in fact, identical to what you would see in a ventricular live beating heart cell. So we're very hopeful that with the development of this technology and its advancement further in the next few years, we will be able to more or less mimic or have a clinical trial in a dish. You know, doing clinical trials before That's you right. even do them wow. on patients, which is mind-boggling.
Wow, you could maybe get to the point where you don't need patients to do it on.
I'm not really sure if the FDA will approve.
not yet, but maybe yeah. in the next decade or two.
Right, we'll see. Right.
Because we have seen drugs that have been approved where the FDA has approved them, where they actually use synthetic data as the control arm. So we've already got that kind of precedent set. So it's quite interesting. So one more to you, Mina. I am coming back to you, Alice, but one more to Mina. Given the broad spectrum of the cardiovascular conditions out there, how would you prioritize which drugs or conditions to address first through the OncoCardia platform?
So last summer, Alice was able to recruit a few of a few European IT students from different universities who got together in a group and were able to mine the internet for failed or toxic drugs. And we got a plethora of drugs for all these different indications. And basically we went through the entire list. It was very extensive to basically, you know, filter through and select the hot drugs that were highly toxic and failed during, you know, phase two clinical trials and onwards due to their toxicity. And instead of starting from scratch, we're basically taking these drugs that have already been de-risked during the preclinical stages and IND enabling and all that to get to where they are or where they were in phase two clinical trials and onwards. Yeah. We're going to be taking those and re-engineering them. We have identified a few drugs, both in the anti-cancer, anti-immune worlds, and we hope to be re-engineering them soon. We have a list of names that at the moment we cannot disclose because we're currently re-engineering them. But, you know, anti-cancer and anti-immune drugs remain the most prevalent out there that, you know, have red flags due to their toxicity, some form yeah. of toxicity. Cardiotoxicity also remains a prevalent one. But, you know, thankfully, with the development of our technology and our platform, further and further at OncoCardia, we hope to de-risk these drugs so that they're not only cardio safe, but also less toxic with respect to liver toxicity, hepatotoxicity, neurotoxicity, and all the rest.
Yeah, wow. Now, Alice, a significant aspect of any startup, obviously, is commercialization. Could you tell us a little bit about OncoCardia's plans to commercialize your platform and some of the challenges that you're finding in bringing such groundbreaking solution to market?
Yes, absolutely. So at OncoCardia, our whole mission is we want to bring our own drugs to the clinic, ideally. Although we recognize that we are building this platform that could help a lot of other companies as well. And so at least in the earlier developments of OncoCardia, we plan on at least marketing the AI platform. And so companies that have compounds of interest that want to understand mechanisms of action for toxicity or want to predict potential new analogs that they could work around, that's something that we plan on commercializing.
Nice. And so you are someone who's actually offered marketing expertise to biotech startups in the past. So how are you positioning OncoCardio in the current competitive landscape to attract both investment and partnerships?
Yeah, so I think next year, hopefully when the AI platform is ready, we definitely plan on doing more large scale marketing through both social media marketing and also at conferences. And we're really hoping to work with great companies to help them design better drugs.
Fantastic. And so Mina, back to you again. As an educator and someone who's obviously deeply rooted in the academic sphere, how important is it for emerging scientists and researchers to really understand and be trained in both traditional cardiovascular research and modern techniques such as the ones you two are using at OncoCardia?
Very important. I would say that the world currently is changing at a rate that is unprecedented for any scientist, including myself, to keep up with the pace. ChatGPT, in my opinion, is just a remarkable technology that's just going to get better with time and, may replace a lot of industries, academic institutions in terms of teaching and whatnot. So, as a scientist, I'm really thankful I'm heading into this trajectory of, my academic, I currently am a research assistant professor at Mainline Health, and the CEO and the president of the institution that I'm in, Dr. George Prendergast, has a very interesting and a very new, intriguing work model that he developed a few years ago, known as the acapreneurial model. Training scientists or having faculty that are both scientists and entrepreneurs at the same time. To have the ability to be up to date with the current day and age technology and also, remain robust in the sciences, publish, submit grants and do all the rest is just very important for your full development as a scientist. If you only stick to academia, I don't think you'll get too far. If you only stick to industry, industry is backed by good science. So you need to marry both worlds together in a very, intricate, smooth and healthy manner. Just having that the knowledge of the day and age. What is the new technology? Where is this new technology taking us? How can I use it? How can I leverage it to make my life easier and not go through the traditional routes of just, spending hours upon hours on a model that may be outdated when there are other models out there that are getting the funding, that are getting the, the VC attraction, all that stuff is just, it's so important to be able to it's so important to be open-minded about the current and the novel forms of technology. Being on this podcast, talking to the public about your research, you don't have to get into the nitty-gritty, but as the saying goes, if your idea isn't attractive to your grandmother, it's probably not a good idea. If your grandmother can't understand it, there's really, a handful of people will just read your paper and be interested, but just only those handful of people could actually realize its significance. Yeah. Whereas if you want to attract the capital to your research, if you want to continue to publish, if you want to be this, highly productive, prolific scientist, you need to get out there. And that's the one thing, I guess, out of academia that I didn't, that didn't really click with me. It was just, sitting there in one hub in one office for the rest of your life and not really interacting with the real world. I, through OncoCardia and through my former experience in the drug discovery space, I'm just enjoying developing the networks, talking to VCs, meeting angels, investors, scientists. Every day you're meeting these new people and you're learning a lot during the way. And you start learning how to steer your direction, whether in academia or in industry. Persistence and patience and perseverance are all key traits for developing a scientist entrepreneur. But learning how to make the right turns or stopping or pausing for a bit or, you know, moving back and forth, it's going to be a trial and error process that you acquire along the way. And by interacting and meeting with these new people and developing these networks, you learn how and when to make the right stops, you know, to push hard, to stop, to pause, all the rest. It's a wonderful ride.
And so I guess what you're probably looking for next is funding. Would that be correct?
What is that?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of the listeners to the podcast are in pharma, but most pharma have venture capital arms, right. You know, venture arms. So I should put this out there to them. So if there is anyone who is really interested in this space and has a portfolio that this makes a lot of sense to fund, then if you want to get in touch with Alice and Mina, their website is oncocardia.com and you can reach out to them there. And there's not a lot there right now, but you can reach out to them and get a copy of what they're doing and get a lot more information from them. So fascinating work. Really happy to have you on the show today. Thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you, too.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.